Journalist and water protector Christopher Francisco was arrested on February 23rd at Osete Oyate Camp during the forced removal of a peaceful, unarmed camp at Standing Rock. Chris traveled to Standing Rock from Portland to document the movement as a journalist and is being charged with obstruction of justice for being on site filming to make sure that Morton County and the National Guard did not violate the rights of water protectors during the forced removal. After his release, he has returned to Portland to heal after coming out of the Morton County Jail and continue his dedication to support Standing Rock and water protectors. On March 22nd, Chris must travel back to North Dakota for his arraignment. His cameras were confiscated and are being kept as evidence. He is seeking the return of his equipment and film, and he would also like to document the last moments of the camp, and he is with us now today. Hi, Christopher. How are you?
Pretty good. How are you?
I'm all right. I'm pretty good. Seems like a paradox considering all that you've encountered in the last several months. What has been the most difficult part of transitioning from the camp back to Portland, Oregon?
Probably more just the noise and, you know, the get back into life, you know, trying to get healthy again, you know, the eating right, you know, exercising, doing a lot of walking and just spending time with myself. And, you know, there's a thing called intergenerational trauma, PSD, you know, all that stuff is real. You know, your adrenaline gets going and, you know, it's either fight or flight mode, you know, whenever, you know, anytime the cops show up. Every day it was like that. When you hear that helicopter coming, you just didn't know when they were coming in. And the Army Corps of Engineer told us that they were only here to clean up. But an hour later, you know, they came in and they evicted, you know, they just forced removal of everybody. So it was just pretty much like, I don't know, the way I described it was like how, you know, like my ancestors, how they tried to, you know, defend the land, you know, and here comes a cavalry. And, you know, you can just imagine it's either flight or, you know, fight. And all I did was what I was doing was cop watch, you know, making sure that water protectors' rights weren't being violated, you know, because, you know, they can get pretty rough with the rubber bullets, and they had live ammo. And their National Guard had live ammo, and, you know, they just had their batons, and, you know, they had their mace, you know, it just anything can just pop off anytime. So I kind of just documented that, and at the same time trying to take care of myself. But, you know, towards the end, there's this one kid, Eric, a friend of mine, you know, I saw him. I came around this building right by the main fire, the camp, the main fire that you know, you don't put out. Sacred fire. I came around that corner and he was sitting there fanning himself with some sage. And, you know, I couldn't just leave him behind. So I had to turn around and go back.
That's really intense. I can just imagine a constant state of anxiety and just your body holding that memory all the time. I'm sure you're working through that your muscles definitely retain memory. Are there different kinds of support, or excuse me, different kinds of ceremonies or tasks that you're finding helpful in terms of returning back to city life, different things that are helping you heal?
Like I'm doing like meditation and yoga, you know, like sweat lodges, you know, just really just Navajos, they say, Aquijit Adeya. It means only you can do it. You know, our grandparents always used to tell us that, you know, when you don't feel good and stuff, you have to really pick yourself back up. You know, you have to really dig deep down and, you know, just do some praying in the morning when that sun rises, you know, when that sun comes up, you know, it's another day. You know, you have to appreciate, you know, life.
Kind of that resonates with me, and definitely what my grandmother and my great grandmother used to say, only you can do it. If I was complaining, it did sound like deep wisdom, and I did not argue. Going back to the eviction, the so-called eviction, there were several weeks come from today going back where it seemed like communications were really shut down. We were trying to reach out to you and other reporters and friends and colleagues that were there. What really happened in that process, that eviction process, and how intentional was that shutdown of communication as they were closing and evicting people from Standing Rock?
They had, every morning, Army Corps of Engineers, they had a meeting with us. And as long as we were cleaning up, you know, they promised they weren't coming in. And so everybody let their guard off. You know, we trusted them. You know, okay, you know, the communication is going on pretty good. And then all of a sudden, you know, they just decided that they didn't want to, they just wanted that deadline, the 22nd. And so they, you know, they kicked out. The people walked out on their own, you know, and some people stayed behind. They went back in. I went back in. And so we wanted to continue to clean up. And we thought the communication between us, because the Morton County had their own agenda and the Army Corps of Engineers had their own. There was two separate, you know, two separate communication. And Morton County, they already wanted to come in. They already made plans, as you can tell. You know, they had like all this armory, you know, Hummers, and, you know, they're all lined up coming in. You know, I don't know how many there was. There was like 200 officers, FBIs, BIA. And I think they just wanted us out because they have to start digging underneath that Missouri River. And we're in the way of progress again. So, I mean, the communication part, you know, we thought we were on good terms with them until the last minute, you know, they just came in.
There were conflicting, and I say conflicting just because the communication was spotty in the last few weeks for a lot of us. We were receiving pictures of different violence happening from the authorities towards people who didn't want to leave Standing Rock. How long did that take place? You know, what level did that take place at, you know, between those who were choosing to leave the camp and those who were choosing to stay, and the different agendas that you were mentioning from the different authorities?
Well, it's been going on. They moved the barricades. When they started moving the barricades, you know, people, you know, our anxiety and stress level went back up. We already knew that they were coming in, and we knew that they're going to take us out sooner or later. And they wanted to build a new generation, the treaty camp up on the hill. And when they built that, you know, I think they got scared about that. It was on a sacred site, and we're just trying to protect sacred sites again and having our ceremonies, and I think they became afraid of that, and they're always afraid of us. You know, we're just water protectors and doing our ceremonies, and they feared us of the ceremonies, and that's what made us do the things we were doing, and they didn't understand that. So they you know, used police brutality. They, you know, a BIA cop, you know, assaulted this one young lady and hit her in the leg, you know, over at Sacred Stone Camp. And they broke another water protector's hips on the 22nd when they were walking out. Some people moved, you know, some people voluntarily left, and some people were standing, still standing their ground, and they didn't want to leave. So they started chasing people on a 1806 highway.
Let's segue and talk about your materials that are still in North Dakota right now that you're trying to get back. They confiscated a camera and
a cell phone.
And a cell phone?
Yeah.
Any photographs or film or?
Yeah, I've been documenting, you know, here in Portland, I do cop watch. You know, that's what I do here when there's demonstration, protest stuff going on. So I was doing the same thing over there, and also documenting some of the cleanup that was going on, because they were saying that we're just not cleaning up, we're leaving trash behind. We're working as fast as we could, doing the best we can, but without equipment, heavy equipment. You know, it was very hard to dig under frozen stuff. And there were so many donations donated, and it was really hard to take out.
Oh, that's incredible. There was lots of tribal elders from around the world that came to Standing Rock. And certainly this isn't an isolated incident. There's other projects and pipelines in North America right now that are being projected to be built on tribal lands. What are the international tribal elders doing with our North American elders to support our water and support protecting it and support these lands? What are plans going forward?
A lot of people, water protectors went out, you know, on their own, and there's one starting in Ohio by a group of water protectors from Oshate Oyate. And the elders, they pretty much, you know, depends, you know, like who you talk to. Some of them, they're pretty much, you know, like want to keep it peaceful. Some, they want to keep moving, you know, like keep protecting water everywhere. So you just have to pick which one you want to go to now. You know, it's popping up all over. Mm-hmm. It's just the beginning. It's, mm-hmm. it's not over. I mean, from this point on, for our future generation, we have to stand up and protect the water. Because nobody else can do it. You know, like, Akwijit all day, only you can do it. Mm-hmm. Only we can do it for our future kids, you know. And we have to do it now because they're going to fight even more. We have to, you know, protect even more, stand up more for the water and for our kids.
Absolutely. I wanted to make sure our audience knew you've got to go back to North Dakota for your arraignment, and you're hoping also to get your equipment back. And there is a website that people can donate to. And I'm going to, it's kind of long. It's at www.ucaring.com/Christopher Francisco-769443. I'll say that one more time. It's www.ucaring.com/Christopher Francisco-769443. When you get to North Dakota for your arraignment, what other ways are you going to be able to get back in touch with those that might still be there in Sandy Rock?
Yeah, there's a camp over at Eagle Butte that has been opened up, and then there's the Cheyenne River camp that's still open right now. That was by Cheyenne River President Mr. Frazier. He's over there holding it down. And the Eagle Butte is at the powwow grounds, so they opened that up to all the refugees, the water protectors that have no place to go, and they're transitioning to other places. Or it's like a little refugee camp there now. Mm. So I'll probably go over there and do some more filming and, you know, see what's going on, what's left of it, you know, and, you know, kind of close that chapter for that.
All right. Well, Christopher Francisco, thank you so much for coming down and talking to us. And we're very, very glad that you are well and safe and still in our community. I'm Zell Marchant, and this has been an In-Depth with Christopher Francisco from Sounding Rock on the KBOO Evening News.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Blue Mountain Biodiversity Project annual benefit show on Friday, March 10th from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. at the Levin Community Center in Portland. Blue Mountain's Biodiversity Project is a forest defense organization that has been successfully defending eastern Oregon forests for the last 25 years against ecological destruction. This benefit features music by A Stick, A Stone, Cinder Well, and Johanna Warren, as well as humor, storytelling, and more. Again, that's the Blue Mountain Biodiversity Project annual benefit show on Friday, March 10th from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. at the Levin Community Center, 5431 Northeast 20th Avenue in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the premiere screening of Precipice Award-funded animation project, Jen Likes Heroin, on Thursday, March 9th at 7 p.m. at the Hollywood Theater in Portland. Jen Likes Heroin is an animated short film which takes place at the long-defunct X-Ray Cafe. Following the animation, there will be a showing of the documentary about the X-Ray Cafe called X-Ray Visions, and a short acoustic set by Sean Krogan of The Pinnacles and Cracker Bash. Again, that's a screening of X-Ray Visions and Jen Likes Heroin and a live performance by Sean Krogan on Thursday, March 9th at 7 p.m. at the Hollywood Theater, 4122 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Mm-hmm. KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Rob Wallace speech, Big Farms Grow Unhealthy Food, They Also Grow New Diseases.